Hey, you're listening to Career Talks with Larry Career Eye.
Hey, one of the most talented event organizers, restaurateurs, all those things. Like, do you still do those restaurant and emceeing and stuff?
I do.
Kodamakore, what's up?
I do indeed. Thank you, Larry. It is an absolute pleasure to be speaking to you after 8 whole years.
8 years.
You believe it? 8 years.
Wow. What was I doing 8 years ago?
I'll tell you.
When Mugabe was president.
I know. Well, he was when he was alive. I'll tell you what you were doing 8 years ago. Well, not eight. I know what you're doing in 2008.
Okay.
I was running Symphony Restaurant. The irony of Symphony was it was no under 21.
And you were not 21.
I was 20. And I was the manager. And that's where I first met you. Oh, and gosh. You'd come there every single day and you'd sit in the corner. And then we'd talk. And I started talking to you. And then you started telling me about... What intrigued me was the way that you spoke. Very good command of English. I knew that you were different. And then I think from there, our relationship just kind of... I don't know. It just kind of unraveled. And then before you know it, we're sitting in a car somewhere and we're driving to Mike Ainge's show at 12 in the afternoon.
Marasta.
We're going to the lake. Marasta. We never slept.
Oh.
Yeah, man. But gosh. It's an absolute pleasure to have you.
That was an interesting night.
It was. I don't know how we kept up, though. I don't know how we kept up. Can I tell you what I was remembering the other day?
Uh-huh.
I remember that I would only sleep on Tuesday.
Why Tuesday?
Because it was the only time that nothing was happening.
What do you mean? What Monday nothing was happening?
Okay. Yeah, Monday and Tuesday.
Okay.
Wednesday was sunrise hockey.
Okay.
Thursday
and
was...
And then Marasta in the evening.
Yeah. No, I'm lying. Yeah, so I know. It's Monday that we slept. So Tuesday was the hockey.
Uh-huh.
We'd go there with Nyasha and Ziki and Mafia, I think. They used to play hockey and end up drinking anyway. Wednesday was Marasta with my IUD. Thursday was a Manzi.
Uh-huh. Oh my gosh, I forgot. Remember Manzi?
Manzi Thursday is the bad. Friday was the usual, either Sky Bar or whatever. Saturday was the usual, Broidal Village. Sunday was
sometimes
Marasta.
It'd be like Marasta in the afternoon.
Yeah, Marasta in the afternoon at the lake. Yeah, Saturday. Yeah, yeah. Sunday would do Sunday. Mad Sunday would be at Red Fox. So literally, we slept Monday and Tuesday. Monday.
I mean, I would miss a lot of that stuff. Personally.
You missed sunrise and the funny.
And sometimes I'd miss Thursdays and Fridays, actually.
I missed nothing.
Yeah, I mean, Friday Symphony had, what's his name? Dean.
That thing where
you had to be on the guest list.
Do you know what and this is the song that Dean would make. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yes. I love your smile. Yeah.
Is that the name of the song?
Yeah.
That
by Shanice.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you old.
Nah, I just love music.
Okay.
As we'll be able to keep up now, given that AI is going to be creating so much music that the culture and the art of music is probably going to die. And then, because music is just going to be like in, out.
Let's talk about AI.
Yeah.
Right. What are your thoughts? So I'll play devil's advocate, right? I think that we need artificial intelligence to get rid of humans.
What? Are you like Thanos now?
Or Elon?
No, I'm more like Thanos.
No.
I think you're like Thanos from...
I did say I'm playing devil's advocate, right?
Thanos, what is it? What's
from
Avengers.
Avengers, yeah.
Yes, Thanos. That's it.
I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
From now on, officially,
I'm inevitable. Is that what he used to say?
I have no idea what he says. I know he clicks his finger and stuff happens. But I think we need to talk about AI because I think about it. Let me tell you a story. Many years ago, maybe 6 years ago, whatever, I was in Durban and I was looking for a restaurant called Antique Cafe. And I had this bright idea of automating orders in a restaurant, right? So we don't need waiters. Literally, if you walk into a guy like you, I can profile you. You're a guy that wants to sit on your laptop, you want to put your headphones on, you want to work. The last thing you want is a waiter saying, I'm done, I'm just going to say, special. You're just like, I know exactly what I want when I come here. I want 2 cappuccinos, I want a burger, and then later I'm going to need a slice of cake. why must I bug you by bringing a waiter to you every 5 seconds to check on you? So the idea is automated. So just put a tablet on the next on the table. You can literally say, next round, press a button. Which is good. You know, but then the only thing I didn't like about the idea was it was taking away from what I do, which is empowering people and making sure that people are in jobs. So I think the predicament for me is trying to find the balance between technology and the use of human beings in this world.
I mean, look, what we have right now is that capitalism has died. I think we now suffer from what I call techno-feudalism.
Techno-who-in?
Feudalism.
Techno-feudalism. Okay.
So essentially, we've gone back to the 1800s where there's serfs and there's, everything is about productivity. So the human has been eliminated from every experience. Just that even human beings are trying to create versions of themselves online that are not human. So
Wait. By saying that, are you speaking to social media?
It's not just social media. You look at they tell you that, hey, you need to be a brand,
right?
So no, you need to be Larry. That's what makes the world function better. And you need to be, what's the thing that when you have filters, so they make you as much. Little kids are walking around trying to look as much an android type of being as possible.
We want to make you as palatable as possible.
Just non-threatening and so forth. Like we're destroying innovation and putting it in the hands of a few tech billionaires who have just converted the human experience into productivity types. So when we talk about productivity types, we're really talking about all you are is a tool. So what they really talk about a lot of the time in this techno-feudalistic place is to say, well, your only function is to make sure that the business makes money. You have no other function. Then they say, okay, how can we make you more efficient? And you start looking at yourself and say, how do you become more efficient? It's almost as if you're a machine.
Is that a bad thing?
Well, it's increased suicide rates. It's increased the quality of life has dropped. The human-centered innovation has dropped. So even if you look at the tech billionaires who become super rich, they are very unhappy human beings. You can see them. Because, sure, you're going to create this thing. The funniest thing is you look at them, Elon Musk and all those guys. It's almost like they're funny caricatures of cartoons like The Pinky and the Brain that
right.
You used to watch. Like, you know, we used to laugh and say, and then I can destroy the whole world.
And it's happening now.
And you're like, bro, do you remember that? Those were cartoons.
Right. Sorry, somebody's calling us and they shouldn't be calling us. We'll be glad. Okay.
So that's the only problem. Because human beings generally won't do what is in their best interest.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I worry about. Like, human beings are capable of self-destruction. So you created the atom bomb, and then you wiped out
Hiroshima
and Nagasaki. And no one has been held accountable for that.
Right.
It was like, oh, oops. But till today, we keep talking about the craziness of Hitler. How why not the craziness of the person who decided it was okay, knowing that this was going to wipe out a whole bunch of people?
But I will stop you there because
I'm saying both are bad people. I'm not saying Hitler was a nice person, not at all.
I think that any story that's told out of context always. Unfortunately, any story that's told out of context has got the danger of painting an inaccurate picture.
Okay.
I don't purge Hitler because he put Jews in concentration camps. That's the side we were told.
No, look. There's no point that ever you can say, look, this is excusable. I mean, it was the wrong side telling the story. Look, even if it was 100,000, that's 100,000 too many. If it's 6 million, even if it's 2 million, whatever it is, because I know many people are having arguments around that.
May I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you a Christian?
No, I wouldn't identify myself as one.
Are you Christ conscious at least?
I'm conscious of other people's expression of their belief in Christ.
You know what that is? That is the most dodgy answer I've ever held in my life. The reason I'm asking you this is this. If I asked you to tell a story 50 years from now about who Robert Mugabe was, what story would you tell? You experienced it, right?
I'll tell you that the revisionism is already happening now.
The what?
The memory of Mugabe has already changed now. Even among those people who didn't like him.
Right. People now view him as a hero, right?
Yeah.
10 years ago, he was the worst thing that ever happened. Right? Well, maybe 20 years ago.
There are some people, yeah.
So, was he... I don't know. I don't want to get into too much Zimbabwean politics because this country scares me. We might just die. Nah. No. We're in free talks. We're safe. The point I'm making is this, Larry. If Robert Mugabe truly was at the helm of those killings or whatever he's blamed for, right? How come you can sit there today and view him as a hero? Maybe not you, but the people that do.
No, okay, I think...
Context, right?
I think it's important to say, look, if you look at... Just to finish off on Adolf Hitler, because I want to talk more about what you're up to.
Right.
This guy created what he called a final solution to get rid of specific human beings. And when he created gas chambers, he waged a war. I mean... The war was none of our business in Africa because, look, those guys were, all of them were imperialists. All of them were guys who were mistreating Africans anyway. So we have no heroes on either side. But you can see where, the reality is if you look at it historically, when Hitler wanted to get rid of the Jews and put them in the United States, United States turned them back. So it's not as if there was one side that was particularly. So but what I'm saying is that being the issue, the reality of the matter is he went and decided to kill them.
Right. So according to you, right? Here's how I believe, right? It doesn't matter how many of you are on one side, you could. A million of you could be wrong. A truth has got nothing to do with numbers. Truth is truth, right? So
Stalin killed a bunch of them, but because he was on the side that won the Second World War, nobody really talks about it.
Yeah, but do you see a trend?
What's the trend?
If you're going to be a world changer, you're going to have to kill some people.
Are you going to be like Kanye right now?
No, I'm not. Wow. at least not on this podcast. That's not how I intended.
Stop there.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about hospitality. Okay.
Because no.
What else do you want to... I really want to continue this discussion after because I think that dictators are necessary.
What?
I think that it is...
This is Aristotelian type of letters.
I think that dictatorship is a necessity.
Okay.
Because democracy doesn't work all the time. They asked us when we went back to speaking hospitality, right? What is the most effective way of management? You can either be a democratic leader, an autocratic leader, or you can do laissez-faire, right? The most effective one is neither of them, right? It's a situational leader.
So that's not necessarily a dictator.
Allow me to speak. Situational leader that allows, in moments where you have to be a dictator, you do.
No, but I don't think...
I wouldn't call it dictatorship. I think it is. I think the moment that you walk into a place...
Decisiveness and dictatorship are two different things.
Well, it's a very, very thin line. And to be honest, the line doesn't actually exist. Because I'll ask you to look for the Oxford Dictionary definition of dictatorship, right? Decisiveness is part of dictatorship. It's deciding that you're going to do stuff that people are not going to agree with. Decision-making is either way. Whether you're a dictator or not, you will make a decision to allow people to vote.
Okay, what I will disagree with is the laissez-faire. I don't think laissez-faire.
Laissez-faire is the worst type of management because that's complacency at the highest level.
It's let's hug everybody.
Let's
see how this
what
goes.
What would you like to do today? You want to sit? Of course, sit. You don't want to do work.
Do you know what you're sounding like, though?
Go ahead.
You're sounding like one of those boomers talking about their kids. And say, you know what, these young millennials, they don't get it. They don't understand hard work.
No,
you're turning into that guy.
I really am. I think I'm getting old, Larry. I'm listening to myself.
You used to believe in empowering people. And
I do.
Decisions.
Well, let's talk about what the work I'm doing, right?
Are you creating little dictators?
No. I'm empowering
they
leaders.
They could be later dictators.
That's their decision. That's where decisiveness comes. You make a decision that today...
So some of them could be laissez-faire.
None of the people that I train can be laissez-faire. It's impossible.
So that means...
I train at the highest level.
So you kick them out if they laissez-faire.
I become a dictator and I kick them out.
Gosh, this is so weird. Let's go. What'd you say?
Okay, so...
No, you're saying the work you're doing in training.
Right, so... Yeah, so... South Africa has been very rewarding for me in a sense. I mean, I left it 2017. I left in February,
just before Mugabe was about to, correct, you know, resign. You know, decided to hang out with us, not like being in the day job.
Until the dictator found a dictator who dictated that he must resign.
Okay. Right. I don't know what to do with that information.
I'm just saying.
There's just a lot coming up.
By the way, we are eating burgers today from Utah Catering. Larry's on his second burger, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway.
I just wanted to drop, name drop.
We're marketing. I'm marketing my friend. He made us 10 burgers specifically for this recording.
We're not having 10 burgers, just to be clear.
I just want to say Larry's on his second. I've had two so far. We're on four. I think by the end of this recording, we will be on 10. The guy's name is Itai Uta. He's absolutely amazing. You saw him earlier.
Is he one of your people, your students? And
he doesn't know it yet, but he is my student.
Are you one of like the Joker? Like,
it's funny you should say this. Can I tell you a story? I can't mention the name. But I was speaking to someone this morning. Oh, wow. Where did you get that?
Because that's what he does in the dark.
Do you know what she said to me?
Uh-huh.
She said, you're the Joker, but the last one, go look him up. Because I said, I don't want to be called the Joker. I say that because I think for the longest time in my life, I mean, when I was young, I've always been a funny guy. And it's been very difficult to try to escape that into trying to be a serious businessman. Because people are like, but are you being serious or just being yourself? And so if anyone ever says to me, I've never watched any of the, you know, what do you call it?
The Dark Knight. Yeah.
Never. So when she said Joker, I immediately became defensive. I was like, I don't want to identify with that. Because it's been a hard escape to try and get people to take me seriously.
So to understand the Joker, he's a person who says, so in the Dark Knight, he says you took Gotham's White Knight, and then so even if you get rid of me, I have sown the seed for the chaos that will come later.
Oh, cool! I'm the Joker. I think I should watch the thing. I'm just taking Joker, and I'm thinking of a Joker. But okay, cool. Now,
he's almost like the anti Batman in that they're.
Do you know what I call my
motivation?
Do you know what I call myself?
What?
A perfect contradiction.
Okay. Or just tell us more.
I've got at least 15 tattoos. Right?
How many of them are Christian?
All of them.
Okay, just to be clear.
Well, except for the one with my father's name and my mom's name. The rest of them are Bible verses and my true identity, which is God's son. But I think somehow, you know, I missed a job. I think many years ago, I was supposed to go on Disney cruise because I really wanted to be on a cruise line. And I didn't get that job because I had tattoos. I qualified purely on merit.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best guy for the job. But I lost the job because I had tattoos on and I felt like it was very unfair. And so sometimes, you know, I've worked hospitality all my life. I never studied anything else. I left high school and started studying hospitality. So the perfect contradiction comes in a sense where if you listen to me wearing a suit and then you see me without my shirt on singing Marasta, you'd be like, but how can you? And then in another realm, I'm this perfectly made up guy who's like, good afternoon, sir. How can I help you? Would you like to see? Right? And so it's almost like this massive contradiction where people are like, you're not, but I'll call it a fair balance. I grew up in Fakosa. Went to Mutuno primary school. They've been a mascot, yeah. You know what that means? Hot sitting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You never hot sat.
We did with them.
Do you know what you said? You said we did. That's how I know you're relating to a group of people that did it.
We did.
Larry, did you ever go to school in the afternoon?
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
So we were probably the OGs, like, well, the second wave, because that would have been the early 90s.
Right.
That we were doing that.
Right. So
it was. It actually comes up in episode 2 of my Mugabe podcast.
Oh, you. Oh, so you've got a Mugabe podcast?
Yes.
But you wouldn't allow me to speak about him.
I didn't say you couldn't.
No, you said, let's leave it at that.
No, you were about to go down a rabbit hole on Hitler. That's what I
was saying. Oh, snap. Oh, you were stopping me on Hitler. Okay, I will continue that on another episode of Great Talk. I told you we need 30 minutes. Anyway, let's spend the next 10 minutes talking about the work that I'm actually doing.
Yes.
So I came back. After 8 years, I came back last week. I mean, I've been back for a couple of days, whatever, to do some work. But I came back last week because I was contracted to MC weddings. And I arrived in the majestic Victoria Falls, and I landed at the Outlook. And I want to tell you something, Larry, that people don't realize is the amount of gold that we're sitting on. Victoria Falls is literally begging for people with great ideas to take it forward.
But there's so many snakes there, bro.
You mean snakes as in people? Or
snakes.
Or real snakes?
Yeah.
There's also mongoose.
And I'm again. I would love to go and live in Vic Falls. But me and snakes, I can't even. Do you know I've never watched Snakes on a Plane?
Can I tell you the
word? And I know it's a fiction.
So there's something terribly wrong with you.
I don't like snakes.
Right. You don't have to like them. Right. I'm the one. There's two animals that I'm not scared of. Lions and snakes.
No, lion over there, we're cool. Snakes? I don't know where you are.
I think because I'm Christian. I'm not Christian, by the way. I'm Christ conscious.
Okay. There's a difference?
Of course.
What does that mean?
Christ consciousness is me knowing who my Savior is. And understanding what I believe and living that truth every day.
Mm.
Christianity has now, right, in my life become this members only club. You drink, you can't come to us. Or you smoke, I'm sorry. Or what you do, what? And yet, Christ himself hung out with the drunks. So Christianity has become this members-only club that if I saw you with your locks, I'll be like, ah, that's the man who changed me. I got to go to my shoe because that is sweet. And so I can't relate to that anymore. I can't relate to the term. Christ consciousness is the fact that I know who my Savior is. I'm truly aware of what I believe in. And I walk and live my faith on a daily basis.
Okay, Vic Falls.
Right. Victoria Falls is booming with opportunity. So I landed there and we started training. I own a company. We have a company called Creed Hospitality.
Which how many is we?
Right now we've got Lawrence Mattock, who's the managing consultant. Who, you will not believe this story. When I was a trainee at Meikle's Hotel, Lawrence Mattock was group operations manager. Director of Meikle's Africa. So he oversaw Meikle's Hotel, the Cape Grace in Cape Town, and the Victoria Falls Hotel. He gave me my first consulting contract in Ethiopia. I was 20 years old. And I went with him. He gave me a contract and I said to him, I don't know how to do this job. For $1,000, I was food and beverage control and loss and risk manager, 20 years old. And I said to him, Lawrence, I've never done this. He said, don't worry, I'll be there. He probably taught me 70% of the things that I know in hospitality.
So Bill is your mentor.
Yeah, he's my mentor. And I mentioned.
And now you're a business partner.
Correct.
Thank God. I mentioned them in the book. I wrote a book called The Art of Service.
Okay. Where do people find that?
Right now, it's exclusive. We haven't put it anywhere else. So I use it as a training manual, and then I sell it to the properties that I'm going to train at. Mm. It's the only hospitality training manual that exists that's written by a Zimbabwean.
Okay. So there's you, there's Lawrence.
There's Lawrence Mattock. Mm-hmm. There's me. There's my assistant. And then there's God himself, who is the CEO of the company.
Okay.
So we're all partnered with the Father. We're doing God's work. Training people into hospitality is doing God's work. I'll tell you this, because service is not easy. It's not easy to smile at people when you're having a bad day. It's not easy to work on Christmas Day.
Neither is that why you wanted to automate?
Correct. Now you see. Okay. But then the automation then plays against me, because then I can't empower people. Well. Then God's like, you know what I mean? But I'll tell you the truth though, Larry. Hospitality is not an easy industry. However, I think that every child, I think it should be mandatory that when, you know how you do national service? I think it's mandatory for every child when they finish A-level to do at least 1 month of being a waiter in any restaurant. Do you know why? Because waitering teaches you humility, punctuality. It teaches you how to treat people with respect, and teaches you service. If you stand in front of someone and have to go and kneel and say, I'm so sorry, food is going to be delayed. Doesn't matter who you are, right? It's service. The reason I wrote the book, by the way, the book has got absolutely nothing to do with hospitality. That's what I mask it in, right? That's all I know, because that's all I studied after school. But it's a guide to, it's life lessons. I write what I call the A to Z of service. A, attention to detail. B, be courteous. C, find your charm, right? These are tools that anyone in any industry needs. I keep telling people that, you know, it doesn't matter if you're going to study hospitality or not, but what I wrote is stuff that will apply to any industry. Whether you decide and say, oh, I don't even care about this guy's training, I'm just going to be a doctor anyway. Well, guess what? In your surgery, you're going to have to say, good morning, welcome to Dr. Larry's. What would you like to do today? Right? Be courteous, pay attention to detail, watch the people that you're working with, serve with a smile, right? So hospitality borders on every industry, because service exists in every industry, right? Hospitality is just the epitome of service, because you're paying for it. You don't pay for service at a radio station. Just go listen to the radio. But if you do own a radio station, you're going to have to learn how to interview people, be nice to your staff, treat them well, give them lunch. And that's what I cover in those 15 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that I've spent 15 years working in the industry and my book is only 15 pages long.
Fascinating. Okay. So then how did the training in Victoria Falls start?
It went well. So I trained for 2 days at Zambezi Boutique. And then I realized that the level of service in Zimbabwe is... it's ridiculously low, but there's great potential. Mm. I'm going back again on Tuesday to train for Blessing and Zambezi Boutique for the next 3 weeks. And then I'm going to move on to the Outlook. And then hopefully I'll come back and train where I first began, Miko's Hotel.
Look at you.
I know. I went there today and I asked for an appointment with the general manager. And I think I'll get one tomorrow. And if they refuse to pay for the training, I will train for free.
Because it's home.
Because when I wrote the book, I said, and to Miko's Hotel, the place where we learned hospitality excellence.
It's no, wrong. Don't be saying that so that you lose your negotiations.
I can't. It won't be Miko's anyway. It's becoming the height in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, there we go.
You're right.
Yeah.
So I would like to train for the first international hotel brand that's existing in this country. Exciting times ahead of us in hospitality.
It's the first international hotel brand? Right? So weren't your Sheratons and so forth international hotel brands?
I have a lot to say about that, but I won't go into it.
Yeah, because it's an industry that you're working anyway. Correct. So you don't want to be creating unnecessary
Thank you.
Drama.
Thank you for your understanding. I was about to say Miko's is the only 5-star hotel in Zimbabwe, but then I'll be telling you stuff that you shouldn't know, because the Crown Plaza calls themselves 5-star and they're not.
So, about that, what do they look at? I mean, you know, in general, what do they look at when they say you're going to be certified as a 5-star? Because, you know, I think if somebody's going to spend money on a place, they should know that, look, it's not necessary, because the stars are not necessarily limited to Zimbabwe, are they?
No, not at all. I mean, if you look at guys in Dubai, they moved away from five star, because five star was the highest, right? They moved on to seven diamond, right? For the simple reason that you can't have a property that's in third world Africa, as much as it's the best property and can be rated five star, and then compare it to the Burj in Abu Dhabi, which is also five star. So at some point we had to cross the line and say, okay, cool, we'd have to classify these guys in a different rate. Because as much as you're five star, you can't match up. It doesn't make sense. There's a lot of factors that come into, I mean, being a five star property is probably the least of your problems, because people don't really look at that. You could call yourself a five star property and people would believe you. But there's guys like Ruler and Chateau, right, which certify people, and they've got, I mean, the manual for you to be certified by Ruler and Chateau is massive. It's probably this thick.
Okay, they, by the way, it's about...
Oh, shame. Oh, sorry, this is audio. I said this thing.
It's about... Yeah. So what they look about for, 5 centimeters, right. 5-7 centimeters.
So what they're looking for, basically, is there's some standards that they're looking for. So, and it's silly stuff like your curtains have to be... what do you call it? What's the term? Where if you close your curtains, you can't see that it's daylight, right? That's part of the thing to tick.
That's just that thing.
That thing is important. You will fail. You can have the best managers, the staff, the steak could be made perfectly well. You can have Jamie Oliver and what's his name? What's the other dude's name? The crazy, the one that talks a lot.
The guy who swears a lot.
Doesn't, the one who doesn't know how to cook?
Gordon
Ramsay.
He doesn't know how to cook?
No. He's a showman.
You were just taking shots today, aren't you?
Gordon Ramsay is a showman. He's a TV chef.
Okay,
I'll give an example. So it's Larry. I'll give an example. Let me give the equivalent. Let me give you an equivalent for your industry, right? They're very, very famous podcasts. Very famous. I will not mention a single name because I'm really trying to be Christ conscious right now.
Please do. Be conscious, right, of Christ.
That have got so many followers that discuss nonsense.
But nonsense is necessary.
And then there's Greedy Talks, where you discuss depth, but you might not have 150,000 views. I mean, if you do, congratulations, right? The point is, the validation for the work that you do is not in the numbers that applaud you. It's about the depth of the content that you're putting out. Correct?
So you're saying that Gordon Ramsay is no depth?
I think Gordon Ramsay is a terrible chef.
Have you tasted his food?
No.
So how do you know?
I said I think he's a terrible chef. I think he's a showman of note.
I think he's probably just a chef who knows how to create a great
He's a great cook. I think he's an okay cook.
So okay, so who would you classify internationally? Because if I say you're going to say my mom is...
I probably would.
So
internationally, who do I think is a great chef?
Salt Bay?
I don't know. He's not even a chef. He's the worst. That guy knows nothing about food. Absolutely nothing.
Except the salt.
He can slice a good steak. Uh-huh. I think if I had a shop, I'd make him into my head butcher.
Oh my god.
He's not a chef.
Okay, so Jamie Oliver.
No,
probably he's a good chef.
No, he's a cookbook artist. He's your mom's favorite cookbook artist.
Okay. What about the ones from South Africa, like Siba's Table?
Siba I had a crush on, so I'm going to say she's a good chef. I'm telling you the truth. I thought she was the prettiest chef I've ever met in my life. When I saw her, I was like, I would really love to meet this woman. So I'm very biased towards Chef Siba, so I won't talk about her.
Okay, so give me the 5 tips you'd say if you were out there and you say, why should you're thinking about going into hospitality. And also, given the environment in Zimbabwe, where the pay isn't that great and so forth, why you should go into it, and then what are the prospects? Because, you know, I mean, like what's happening in Zimbabwe right now, there's been such a huge brain drain in terms of hospitality talent.
Right.
Quite a few people that I know have just moved to South Africa, to Zambia and Namibia,
mm-hmm.
where they work in as chefs. I mean, not chefs, but waiters. You know, just waiters.
Correct.
Which is why you probably come in now and you say, look at the level of chefing. I mean, even chefing. I mean, Chef Zinzi is now in Cape Town.
Oh, really?
So what I'm just saying is that even chefs have been just, like, you know, this economy just not working. But what would you say to somebody who's like, it interests me because when I watch, you know, it on TV and I've always wanted to serve people, but also I want to be a parent, and being a parent means you need to make money.
Right.
What is it that you think you say to encourage people to get into
the industry?
Into the industry.
I'll tell you this here. I strongly believe that hospitality is a calling more than it is a job.
Okay.
I wanted to use profanity, but the father told me not to. It's quite a shitty job because on New Year's Eve, when people are counting down, we are the guys that are saying, can I give you another round? On Christmas Eve, when you're gojaring your chicken with your gogo, we are the guys in the restaurant waiting at Christmas lunch. Not that we don't have families. Of course we do. They're waiting for us to finish the shift 5, 6 p.m., whatever.
And then there's people like Larry who will be like will be like four guys left in the pub.
And those guys
never leave. And they don't want to leave.
Right.
And then don't even tip.
Right. And there's a waitress waiting on you. And that is the job of hospitality. The reason waiters are called waiters is because their job is to wait. And wait for you to arrive. Wait for you to sit down. Wait for you to order. Wait for the food to be ready. Bring it to your table. Wait for you to ask me for another request. Wait for another round. Wait for you to pay your bill if you do decide to pay it. If you're drunk enough, then you're going to call shit. That's all you do, man. Just wait on people. You get into this industry not because you want to. You get into this industry because you're called for it. It's a call to service. And so for anyone that wants to join the industry, I say, go look for it. The guy that trained me, the guy that owned the school, we went to Southern African Hospitality Training School. We're trained by American Hotel and Lodging Association. Mike Farrell used to charge $3,000 a year, international fee, for a two-year program, plus $6,000, plus a local fee. And yet, he would still look at you and you went, he'd ask everyone, if you had $3,000 and you walked into his office, he'd interview you. Then he'd say, no, you're not made for it.
Really?
110%.
So you go with your $3,000?
You may leave. You're not cut out for it. Because he can listen to you.
Mm.
Right? He can hear you. Same thing with me now. I'm like Mike Farrell now. I could tell people, I mean, I run a consulting company now where I help people open restaurants. I can open a restaurant from scratch, hotel, resort, whatever. It's not the point. The point is, I can listen to you tell me that you want to open a restaurant and I'll ask you why. I have negotiated myself out of contracts because somebody told me they want to open a restaurant and I said, okay, cool. We need to hire a chef. They're like, no, it's cool. I cook for my family every time I can cook. And I'm like, where do you get off? The people that trained 5 years to do this stuff and you cook at family gatherings and therefore you feel like you can open a restaurant. Here's what I know for a fact, like, if you and me had $5 million today, we could never open an airport. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you and me had $10 million, we could never open a hospital. Mm-hmm. Because there are rules that govern those spaces. But if you had $100,000, you could convince me to open a restaurant for you. And therefore, that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book so I could take it to South African Restaurant Association, ZTA, and say, these are the rules of hospitality. You cannot come into our industry and just wake up. It's like podcasts. Everybody with a microphone wants to open a podcast. Everybody. Listen, there has to be regulation at some point. You cannot allow anyone who's got $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, I don't go for like a coffee shop. Any man who's got a wife who's bored wants to open a coffee shop because it's easy. We went to school and paid $3,000 and trained 2 years and didn't sleep to open these things. People think that they can just walk into our industry. And I'm not fighting it because some guy said to me, you gotta pick your battles, you don't want to win this. Right? And I know that I can't. But I'll advocate for hospitality to be done correctly and be done right. Right? Because it's an actual industry. It is probably one of the biggest industries.
So you're essentially, if it is properly standardized and regulated,
there has to be regulation. Like, then there has to be standardized.
Then it'd be easier for somebody who wants to become, a restaurateur or whatever
it is. Of course,
do you know why? You say this is what you need to be.
So this is what this is what Creed Hospitality is trying to do. What I'm going to know at the end, Larry. Number one, I'm going to regulate what hospitality looks like. Not in Zimbabwe, not in South Africa, in Southern Africa. What Creed Hospitality is building in the next 10 years is by far the biggest hospitality training school. It's going to be called the Creed Academy of Hospitality Excellence. It's brick and mortar. It's not online. I want to see people. I want to talk to them. I want to put them in blazers. I want people to not want... The best hospitality training school in the world is from Switzerland. It's called the Swiss Hotel Management School. We all wanted to go there. We couldn't. But I met people that came from there. And I was like, why did you waste your money? Right? Mm. And so what we're trying to build is building a narrative that Africa can produce some of the best talent. Because guess what? South African hospitality is held by Zimbabweans. I'll tell you that for a fact. The reason why they could never chase out Zimbabwe and South Africa, all of this is a farce. They could never kick us out. It's impossible. Their restaurants would fall apart. So would their hotels and their casinos. Right? Some of the best hospitality talent that exists in the world is in Africa. Like most things. The problem is there is no regulation. Right? So anyone can open a restaurant and pay people whatever. There has to be regulation. The reason why doctors go on strike in Zimbabwe is they say we cannot earn X amount anymore.
Doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. But I'll tell you that there are people. I mean, I went to Vic Falls. I was mortified by the amount of money that people get paid there. It's ridiculous. Not even the casual waiters in South Africa get paid that amount. Do you know why? Because anyone can open a hotel or restaurant or whatever and pay people whatever. Because people are desperate for work. And therefore, if there is regulation, if we write the rules, we can say, on standard, there is no waiter that gets paid less than $200. Every waiter that I've placed in every restaurant in South Africa over the last 8 years, bare minimum, I do not allow waiters. Any of my waiters don't work for commission. I refuse that. They have to have a base salary, at least 4,500 rand, right? I saw people getting paid $120 here, working 9-hour shifts. It's ridiculous, Larry. And so we will take up this story with the Minister of Tourism. We'll take it up with, we'll take it up to the highest office that we need to. The fact is, there is work to be done. And I think the industry depends on people like me and Hazel and Blessing Mbanyu and Lawrence Mattock and Kuda Hove. These are all people that think the same way I think, right? But to bring us together in one room and say, let's agree on this and let's put a petition forward and say, this is what we're proposing. If you really want to open a restaurant, well, come to us. Let us train you to be a restaurant owner. Because you don't know how to sit at 2 a.m. and wait for waiters to cash up. You get bored and you close it down after 2 months and say, I charge my restaurant, I have no money. No, it's you. There is money in restaurants. People are killing it. Mm-hmm. We've worked in it for 15, 18, 17, 20. I mean, I met a lady called Sandra. She runs a Zambezi boutique. Absolutely amazing woman. 31 years in the industry. Started as a housekeeper. Now she's general manager. You open a space, you hire her, and you're like, then you close it down because you were not qualified to be there in the first place.
So if the entry point is difficult, then you'll know that it's going to be difficult later.
Of course. So if we make it hard for you to open a restaurant, and if you go through whatever we want you to go through, or you pay people right, you've done the work.
But then the question will be, will that be not denying investment? Because they'd be like, oh no, let's lower the barrier for investment.
And that's what I thought when I first thought about this. But I said, listen, we would rather have 5 good restaurants than 100 mediocre places.
Hey, I like my Sazza on the corner.
That's fine. That's not a restaurant. It's not a restaurant.
Kula Makore. Where can people find what you're up to?
They can look for me on Instagram. Kuda_Makore. I put all my work there, even my trainings. On Facebook, Kuda Kwasha Makore, I think. And I don't have a local number. I do. I just don't know it. The book is out, The Art of Service. We're taking it to the Minister of Tourism first so that even us
can get access to the land. I'm not distributing the book unless the highest office in tourism sees it and approves of it.
Okay.
And once they approve of it and they're happy with it, then we'll start selling the book.
Highly, highly ambitious. All the best, mate.
Always. Thank you.
Cheers.
And that's it for this week's episode. Add us to your podcatcher or on iTunes now so that you can make sure you never miss out on another second of our wonderful podcast. We would hate for you to miss out. Have a great week, everyone.